You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news with a local perspective. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada. Today on CICK News, here are the top items from Tuesday's Town of Smithers Council meeting. In March 1985, the United States and Canada agreed to cooperate in the management, research, and enhancement of Pacific salmon stocks of mutual concern by ratifying the Pacific Salmon Treaty, or PST. The arrangements and institutions established in 1985 proved effective in the early years of the treaty, but became outmoded after 1992 when the original fishing arrangements expired. From 1992 to 1998, Canada and the United States were not able to reach agreement on comprehensive, coast-wide fisheries arrangements. In 1999, government-to-government negotiations culminated in the successful renewal of long-term fishing arrangements under the Pacific Salmon Treaty. The arrangements and institutions established in 1985 proved effective in the early years of the treaty, but became outmoded after 1992 when the original fishing arrangements expired. From 1992 to 1998, Canada and the United States were not able to reach agreement on comprehensive, coast-wide fisheries arrangements. In 1999, government-to-government negotiations culminated in the successful renewal of long-term fishing arrangements under the Pacific Salmon Treaty. In 5 out of the last 6 years, U.S. commercial marine catch of Nass sockeye was greater than Canadian catch. In 7 out of the last 9 years, U.S. commercial marine catch of Skeena sockeye was greater than Canadian catch. In 2021, there was no Canadian commercial marine catch of Skeena or Nass sockeye, while the Alaskan catch of Skeena and Nass sockeye was likely in the hundreds of thousands. To learn more about the state of intercepted Skeena salmon and what changes need to be made to the Pacific Salmon Treaty moving forward is Greg Knox. This was his presentation to the Town Council on Tuesday night in Smithers.
My name is Greg Knox. I'm the Executive Director of Skeena Wild Conservation Trust, and I've been in that role since 2007. We started the organization, and we work on salmon steelhead conservation in northwestern BC, focusing on making sure their habitats are functioning and also that fisheries are sustainable. And our interest is the long-term benefits that flow back to our communities and making sure that these fish can continue to benefit our communities into the future. So I'm going to be speaking about Alaskan interception fisheries and how they're impacting our regional fishing economy and the town of Smithers. A study done by Counterpoint Consulting showed that the sport fishery alone in the Skeena is worth over $50 million a year. And a significant portion of that, it comes into the community of Smithers. Salmon and steelhead are important far beyond just the dollar values, and they're part of, you know, the community. They're part of the key part of the Indigenous culture, and you know, it really is part of the identity of our communities here in the region and to Smithers. It also keeps people here and spending money and spending time here and drawing people from the region as well. As you're probably also familiar, salmon have been going through some struggles in recent years. We've had with warmer ocean temperatures, which generally means less food in the ocean for our salmon. And we're seeing, you know, more droughts, more flood events, and those are also impacting our salmon and steelhead. And so here in British Columbia, we've taken a lot of actions to try to reduce impacts, and we've suffered a lot of the consequences. We used to harvest about 24 million salmon a year, and we're currently harvesting about 2.5 million a year. And so, 10%. And so that's mostly the commercial industry that's really taken the losses, but also, of course, we've suffered closures to our and reductions in our sport fisheries. Some quick context around why Southeast Alaska is an issue is because, of course, our salmon and steelhead go out into the North Pacific. They spend anywhere from 1 to 4 years feeding out there, growing before they return. And when on their return journey, most of them hit the coast of Southeast Alaska before swimming down into British Columbia. And a lot of them travel on the outer coast of Southeast Alaska, just above Haida Gwaii. And there's major fisheries out there. The reason they're out there is mostly because they're getting value from Skeena sockeye and other species. And the interceptions are quite substantial. Two years ago, we hired two consulting firms, experts, to really put together the best knowledge we have from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the Pacific Salmon Commission, and Department of Fisheries and Oceans, to really understand what are the impacts and how are they impacting. And that's where this information I'll be talking about comes from. So just north of Prince Rupert in Southeast Alaska, last year they harvested 65 million salmon. That's compared to our, 2.5 million. And those fisheries that are taking place are really unselective. A lot of them are these large seine fisheries, essentially haul the nets beside the boat, they crush the fish, and then they dump them on the deck, and there's a hole in the middle, they flop into the deck. And so they're supposed to release steelhead, and they're supposed to release chinook in most of the openings. And of course, those fish are long dead before they get released, usually at the dock or offloading onto another boat. So about, close to 100% die. Whereas here in our Canadian seine fisheries, over 80% survive because of our techniques. And of course, steelhead in the last 5 years have been suffering some of the lowest returns in 2021, especially. So some concerning returns, which of course are also impacting local fisheries. And in 2021, we had the closure partway through the season. And our local fisheries, this is the Canadian commercial at the mouth of the Skeena sockeye fishery. And it's been, we've significantly cut back, but the information we do have shows that Alaska's killing an estimated 10 to 50% of Skeena steelhead every year. And the recent average is about 26%. And so significant numbers of steelhead are dying in Southeast Alaska. And this just gives a quick summary of the general range of the impacts of different fisheries on Skeena steelhead. And in 2023, this last year, it was less. They took about just under 3,000 Skeena steelhead. We only had 10,000. That was just above the 8,000, which would have closed our fishery. And we were lucky because the pink prices collapsed partway through the season, and they had probably half the fisheries they normally have out there. And so you can imagine if they had a normal fishery, it could have closed our steelhead fishery. And it's not just steelhead, it's other species of Skeena salmon. And so they're taking about 80% of the Skeena sockeye catch and 10 to 30% of the total return of Skeena sockeye. But the main reasons for it are to prevent overfishing and to ensure each country is receiving benefits are equivalent to the amount of fish we're producing in our river systems. And it's no longer achieving either of these principles. It was designed in 1985. It was never designed to deal with some of the environmental challenges we're dealing with now. It's really problematic. And in the past, most recent negotiation, we weren't able to make any progress, and Canada really didn't step up at the treaty table to make changes. And so the good news is the solutions are relatively straightforward. Most of the Southeast Alaskan salmon systems are on the inner coast. 3/4 of their fleet's already fishing in there. So really, we just need the 25% that's fishing on the outer coast. They can still catch their own salmon and let our salmon steelhead pass. So that's the primary solution. So what we're doing, that's Skeena Wild, our close partner Watershed Watch, and a lot of allies that we're building, is we're working both inside the Pacific Salmon Treaty to reform the treaty. I've been on the northern panel of the Pacific Salmon Treaty for 14 years. So we're really stepping up our game there, but we're also doing a lot of things outside the treaty. That's challenges to sustainability certification, which is starting to bear fruit. These certifications mean that they can access markets and sell at higher prices. So they're really important to Alaska. We're engaging with purchasers and retailers to raise the issue and put pressure on. We're working on some legal work around the North American Free Trade Agreement, and we're building partners and allies. And so one of the reasons I'm here is to just provide information, but also to ask for whether council will consider a letter of support. I provided a draft example of such a letter, but basically it's a letter to our federal fisheries minister and our provincial minister responsible for fisheries, Nathan Cullen, asking, just highlighting the importance of this issue and its impacts on the community of Smithers, but also asking them to step up their action, both within the treaty process and their diplomatic work with Alaska.
Questions for Greg? Councillor Elliott.
Couple questions. I'm from the East Coast, so I know the detriment of another nation taking fish that should be yours. I don't know if you can speak to the other nations that are fishing outside 2 mile limit that maybe a lot of people don't understand or realize.
Yeah, thank you for questions. Great questions. Answer in the Pacific salmon treaty, it's just Canada and the US. Speaking to the issue of kind of illegal fisheries in the open ocean, there are fisheries, mostly Chinese fisheries that do take place in the open ocean. And there have been increased efforts by both Canada and the US to monitor that through flights and that in recent years. It appears it's not a huge problem, but it's kind of an ongoing question on how big of a problem it is. And something that we're definitely trying to find more information about. But at this point in time, it doesn't seem to be a really big problem like the problem I just, because we recognize that we're producing all these sockeye. In the past, they were for our fisheries. And now most of the sockeye we're producing, or a good chunk of them, are being taken in Southeast Alaska. They're incentivizing these boats to go out to the outer coast, where they have to spend more money on gas and, you know, heavy weather. And it is a conversation we're having about whether we should be producing as many fish as we are, because it's causing some of these challenges.
Thanks, Councillor Elliott. I just have a follow-up. It was partially asked. And just in terms of the outreach you're doing now, are you visiting other local governments, regional districts?
Yeah, so I did a presentation at Terre City Council last night, and they agreed to send a letter of support. And it seemed like they were really interested and concerned. A lot of questions there as well. And so this is the second town council meeting I've had, presentation, and I plan to do more in the region.
Okay, thank you. And just, you made a comment about Canada not stepping up at the treaty table. And do you mean in terms of, I don't know, like fortitude, because you've described who's at the table. So maybe you could just talk a bit more about that.
They've been prioritizing the southern BC fisheries. So Fraser, Chinook, and the South Coast recreational fisheries, and really haven't paid them much attention until the last 2 years. And I think it's probably a result of we've gotten a lot of media attention, releasing our reports and working with allies and working as this larger group of allies, putting pressure on them. So now it's really becoming a much higher priority within the treaty process for Canada.
Okay, and I think just one other thing. I just wondered what your diagram sort of showed the return for our region. And I just wondered what the returns are like, if any, anymore for Washington, Oregon, California.
Yeah, so similar challenges in Washington and Oregon as we're facing, worse in some ways. And so there's also interesting like dynamics there and potential allies with Washington and Oregon, because they, especially for Chinook salmon, 97% of the Chinook salmon that are caught in Southeast Alaska are from BC, Washington, and Oregon. So it's really all our, you know, and so we have a shared concern there with Washington, Oregon.
Sorry, I thought that was my last question. Maybe this is my last question. Just in terms of information, you said Alaska's not providing numbers anymore. Is that optional, or is there some pressure to ensure that the data is provided?
Within the treaty, it says that that's one of the key things that each country has to do is share that information so we can understand the impacts that we're each having on each other's fish. And they're not, like for steel, they are for sockeye and they are for Chinook. But for the other species of salmon, they're providing very little or no information. For steelhead, they used to count and provide us some numbers for some of the catch up until the mid-90s. And then they went to release because they used to be able to sell them, but now they can't anymore as of 1996, I think. And so now we get zero information. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons we're trying to put pressure on our provincial government, because they're responsible for steelhead and Nathan Collins, the minister, and they need to step up at the treaty table to start to be a voice for steelhead. They've been totally absent in the past.
Thanks, Greg. And we don't have a public hearing, so I'm going to move on then to the minutes. There's nothing under section 9, and we're just going to jump forward to council reports. Councillor Bukema.
June 18th, I attended a daytime chamber meeting. And rather than giving a report on all kinds of council matters, I used it as an opportunity for some business owners in the community to speak to a representative of council who were not able to attend the evening that was held between us and the business community. I can't remember what day that was. So I think some of them appreciated that opportunity just because they couldn't attend that evening meeting. And then that same day, June 18th, Mayor Attrill and I attended a meeting between Nathan Cullen and some members of the business community. And I won't go into a lot of detail here. I think the only thing that I would probably say is I think the members of the business community appreciated having an opportunity to talk to someone at a higher level of government as well. There's lots of things that are not in our jurisdiction and are in the jurisdiction of higher levels of government.
Councillor Raven.
On June 15th, I attended the Seniors Awareness Walk. There was a lot of people in attendance, and the Smithers Secondary School Marching Band actually led the parade. We heard from speakers, including Mayor Attrill, MLA Cullen, MP Bacharach, Sharon Hartwell, Rod Taylor, and Ellis Ross. And just thank you to the organizers for that. Just creating the space to talk about our seniors is and their needs is greatly appreciated.
No bylaws tonight, so we're just going to move along to correspondence.
Here's Councillor Elliott.
I just want to draw attention to item 18.1.
18.1 was a letter addressed to the Minister of Forests, Bruce Ralston from the Mayor of Campbell River, Kermit Dahl, who implores government to take immediate and decisive action to protect forestry jobs and ensure a sustainable future for the industry, as it supports nearly 100,000 jobs in the province and contributes $17.4 billion in value-added activity, the majority of those activities derived from logging, wood products, and pulp and paper manufacturing. He went on to urge Min Ralston to consider far-reaching impacts of current forest management practices and to work collaboratively with industry stakeholders to develop policies that support the industry long-term.
So, and you all know why. I think this, to me, this draws attention to the issue in British Columbia and the forest industry, and just was at COFI with Mayor Attrill. And this is concerns me a lot. I know there's a lot of smoke and mirrors regarding government policy and what is causing the downturn in the forest industry. A lot of it is supply issue, timber licensing, supply for the mills. Low supply equals higher prices for logs in BC today. So mills cannot be viable, which is why a lot of them are closing. So I don't know what more to say to that. That's an issue in this province currently. So I'll just stop talking there. Thanks.
Councillor Elliott, I'm sure council hasn't forgotten, but we do have an opportunity to meet with representatives of West Fraser tomorrow. And following that, if there's some desire from council to write to take some action, probably that's a good time, you know, our next council meeting to have any sort of consideration, and this will remain in the in the record. Or now here's
Councillor Bukema.
Thanks, Mayor Attrill. 18.1 was also one that really spoke to me. I remember when we were at NCLGA, there was reference, I went to a forestry presentation, and there was reference made to all these logging trucks, these loaded logging trucks going down Highway 16 past communities that have lost their mills. And I remember just hearing that and thinking, not much of it really. And then recently, on the way back from Prince George to Smithers, I was just shocked at the sheer volume of logging trucks, one after another, after another, after another, that we passed between Prince George and Smithers. It was staggering. So yeah, these forestry concerns definitely speak to me as well and are of big concern to me. Thanks.
Thanks, Councillor Bukema. Just to that note, and because we are going to be meeting tomorrow, you know, there is a limited number of major licensees in our region. And so some of the wood traveling down the road is owned by a major licensee and is going to a mill owned by that licensee in a different area. So there are lots of complex questions that we can consider, but I think having the meeting tomorrow with West Fraser officials is a good first step. Get a bit of information, get the perspective of the licensee that operates here. And I think it's, you know, it behooves us to come in very open-minded and yet ready to ask hard questions. Councillor Patterson.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just related to 18.3, if I may.
Yeah. Was there anything else on 18.1 before we move on? Okay. Councillor Ray, on 18.1.
Yeah. And I think resolution that came out at NCLGA about making sure that the logs stay in the community. I think that's probably, you know, we'll see what West Fraser has to say, but I think that's where we need to focus our attention, because, you know, as the log prices go up because they're scarce, are they just getting shipped straight overseas as well? So there's been a lot. We've fought for the RBA about our resources leaving, and we just heard from our resources being caught somewhere else. We have to stick up for our resources, because if they're just being taken out of our community with no benefit, it's not sustainable.
Thanks, Councillor Ray. Okay, we'll hold that and have some good questions for our meeting tomorrow. Councillor Patterson, you wanted 18.3.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yep, and just more of a comment, if I can. Maybe a question through just staff. I'm not 100% sure, but just the sentiment from the Deputy Mayor of the City of Kamloops, where they reference, "We are therefore urging fellow municipalities in British Columbia to perform a similar evaluation of the costs of higher level government policy changes." I know we talk a lot about the provincial downloading at this table. So I think more just maybe speaking out loud to say that in future, I'd love to chat with council a little bit about what that might look like, recognizing it sounds like a significant amount of work, especially when we're down our director of finance at this time. But I just really appreciated that sentiment.
Mr. Doerr.
Yeah, so we're already doing some efforts to start tracking some of those costs. So we're hoping to have some figures available for UBCM and other activities where we're speaking to the province.
Councillor Patterson referenced correspondence number 18.3, which is a letter from Kamloops Mayor Deputy Katie Neustadter calling for support from all provincial party leaders in BC to support municipalities in the province's proposed downloading of costs to municipalities. Senior levels of government have been shifting services or costs onto local governments for many years. The period of review of this report is from the beginning of 2019 through the end of 2023. As a starting point, since 2019, both levels of senior government have continued to introduce changes to policy, legislation, and regulatory compliance during a period of considerable challenges in the employment market, the social environment, and the economy. As these impacts ripple through municipalities across the province, the impact is being felt at the local government level in the delivery of services, and the need to adapt to address these changes is being felt by town operations and residents. Many of the impacts being felt at the local level are attributed to changes initiated by the federal or provincial governments, and gaps in the ability to deliver the requested services are becoming increasingly evident. Gaps in service delivery include shelters, social housing, and affordable housing. The City of Kamloops released a dense report of the effects of the municipality having to take over costs for these services and more, including fire rescue, community services, and security. And that's all for CICK News for Thursday, June 27th. Enjoy your long weekend.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.